This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U-Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan, and on the Breakfast Grill with me today is Professor Fleming Bashenbacher. He is the chairman of the Carlsberg Foundation. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. I want to begin with the fact that the Carlsberg Foundation is linked to Carlsberg, the brand that we associate with alcohol or beer. And this foundation, and I think a lot of us, when we think about companies with foundations, we think of CSR. But this was set up in the late 19th century, in 1876, to be precise. Did it come out of this tradition of philanthropy?
Well, Carlsberg has a quite unique governance structure, and the Carlsberg Brewery was founded back in 1847 by our founder, J.C. Jacobsen. And you may say, quite surprisingly, he actually, in 1876, donated his brewery to a foundation. He went to the Royal Danish Academy with a charter stating that there should be established a foundation. And there's two purposes of the foundation. One of them is to make sure that the Carlsberg is still well managed when he was no longer here. And at the same time, giving money back to society. And as he wrote in the charter, the money from the foundation should be given back to basic fundamental research within natural science, humanities, and social science. He died in 1887. So from 1888 and onwards, the Carlsberg was then solely owned by the Carlsberg Foundation. That means that there was five professors from the Royal Danish Academy constituting the board of the Carlsberg Brewery.
Is this unusual for a man of his time? Was he unusual for making this kind of decision? Or was there something in the air in Denmark at that time that made this normal?
From that time, it was quite unusual. I mean, the Carlsberg Foundation was the first industrial foundation in Denmark and basically around the world. If you look in Denmark today, we have actually several of the big companies in Denmark. Novo Nordisk company, Maersk, Lego, Danfoss, and so forth, which is actually also controlled by a foundation. But he was the first to establish that foundation. So in that respect, he was quite visionary and sort of well ahead of his time.
Well, where did it come from? Do we know anything about the man? Was it his religious convictions or his ideological outlook? Or what is it that led him to make this rather unusual decision?
Well, he was a quite unusual man in the sense that he came out of ordinary family. His father was actually also a brewer, and at that time it was not trivial to make beer because there was no clean water supply in Copenhagen. But he worked very hard, he was a very bright man, and he had a strong belief in science and innovation. And he established his brewery back in 1847. But he said that I came out of ordinary family, I became very rich, but now I will give back to society. So he shared his wealth, his brewery, and his knowledge with society. So in that respect, you may say it's quite unusual to sort of giving back, although he became a very rich man. He had one son, Karl, and that's why it's called Carlsberg. Karl and Berg is a German word, Berg, and a small hill outside Copenhagen. And you may say, why didn't he give it all to his family, to his single sons, Karl? But that was not that type of person. He really, sharing was very much embedded in his heart and his DNA.
What about the years that have intervened? It's almost 150 years since the foundation was established. How has the foundation dealt with the modern world, and especially in terms of ownership structure? I believe there's some concerns about the ownership plus the voting rights of the Carlsberg Foundation with regard to Carlsberg Group and the brewery.
So I said that Carlsberg was solely owned by the Carlsberg Foundation from 1876 until 1970. And in 1970, there was a merger between Carlsberg and another Danish brewery called Tuborg, and Carlsberg became a listed company. The Carlsberg Foundation still have close to 30% of the shares, but due to an A-B stock structure where A shares have 20 votes and B shares have 2 votes, then the Carlsberg Foundation have 76% of the votes. So you may say we are the main controlling shareholder. Today, the board of the Carlsberg Brewery is very diverse. I'm also the chairman of the board of the directors of the Carlsberg Brewery. We still have the five professors from the foundation, but then we have five independent people coming with more business background. And due to sort of Danish law, we also have five employee representatives sitting on the board.
Are there structural limits because of the way in which shareholding and voting rights operate within this company and the foundation?
The foundation have adjusted its charter throughout the years, and today it's stated in the charter that we should have at least 51% of the votes, which we have, since I just said, we have 76% of the votes. until 2000, it was stated that we had to have 50% of the shares. But the charter has been adjusted so that Carlsberg is today the third largest brewer in the world. In order to adjust the charter, that was necessary in 2000, where there was a collaboration with the Orkla Group, and Carlsberg came into Norway, Sweden, Finland, and we got half of the Russian breweries. In 2007, in 2008, Carlsberg, actually together with Heine, took over the Scottish brewery, Scottish Newcastle. So I think the Carlsberg Foundation have adjusted its charter to so active that Carlsberg brewery could grow and blossom and become one of the international players in within the beer category. We are today in 150 different markets, and is again, Asia is a very important market for Carlsberg today.
Yes, I believe I've had a chance to taste the wares of the Carlsberg Group. Then we could focus on the Carlsberg Laboratory for a moment. It's supported by the foundation. It seems to be dedicated to advancing biochemical knowledge or knowledge of biochemistry. Why that? I mean, why? What's such a specific area in sciences?
The Carlsberg Research Laboratory was actually established also by the founder of Carlsberg back in 1876. And at that time, it was quite unusual that a company like Carlsberg had its own R&D department. And the reason for he established the Carlsberg Research Laboratory was that, again, the founder was a strong believer in science and innovation. And you should know that at that time, it was not trivial to make beer. Besides barley and water, you also need yeast and hops. And at that time, there was no purified yeast for the lager beer. And actually, one of the professors at the Carlsberg Research Laboratory back in 1883 purified the yeast for lager beer. And you may say today, I mean, patent this and protect it and license it to other brewers. But again, this sharing of the founder implied that he actually gave the yeast away for free. So other brewers in Denmark could come and knock on his door and get the yeast for free. And I even have letters from some of the other international brewers actually sent a letter to Mr. Jacobsen, could you please ask us to send lager yeast? So we would not have had the lager beer as we know today without sort of the invention that Carlsberg Research Laboratory. He wrote that the brewer who has the most fundamental knowledge of biochemistry and biology will be the leading brewer in the next century. And I would just echo these words today. Carlsberg Laboratory today is still doing outstanding fundamental research within yeast, raw materials like barley, brewing technology and ingredients. And on one hand, they are doing basic fundamental research. Birgitte Skadehauge, who is today director of the research laboratory, and her team published last year an article in Nature where they sequenced the barley genome. But at the same time, we're trying to take that knowledge and actually to develop that into new products. And, you know, today we are living in a world where the weather is changing, climate changes and so forth. So in certain areas where we're growing the barley, there's too much rain or too little rain. And Birgitte and her team is today trying to develop a more climate-resistant barley based on deep fundamental knowledge down to sort of the single genes of the barley genome.
You know, you are a man of science. That's your background. I wonder if there are any tensions between the desires to understand the world and how it works and maybe the demands to apply that to specific products or technologies in order to make profit. Do you see that in your work and the things that you have oversight? Do you see these tensions?
Honestly, not. As you say, I'm a professor of nanoscience myself and have been director of a nanoscience center from 2002 until 2012. And I firmly believe that this basic fundamental knowledge and more applied knowledge can easily work hand in hand. Many of our developments in our society today is actually originated from basic fundamental knowledge. But I think also scientists, we have an obligation to bring this science into real life and to the business here. And in the corporate world, we always talk about corporate social responsibility. But as a scientist, I would also talk about scientific social responsibility, that we as scientists actually also have a obligation to try to address some of the issues in our society again today. I'm actually here in Asia and right now also chairing another organization called Unleash, where we're trying to come up with new solution to the global challenges in our society, Act 2017 development goals. And as you know, if I look at the world today with the global challenges, I mean, we are 7 billion people on the globe today. That will increase to around 10 billion people when we come to around 2050. Can we feed 10 billion people? Do we have clean water for 10 billion people? We have been using a lot of energy, coal, gas and oil. We have the ever highest level of CO2 in our atmosphere. We see more and more evidence that this CO2 level is correlated with climate changes. We see huge demographic changes in 2040. 22% of the world's population will have an age above 62 years old. And in my opinion, many of these problems here can only be solved by doing basic fundamental research, but actually also research which may help solving some of these issues here, water, energy, climate change and so forth.
We'll come back to the Unleash project in a short while. I do want to ask you also about the support the foundation gives to museums and other kind of endeavors that don't seem to be about science as much as it's about history or a sense of identity. Why does the foundation do that, and what are the projects that the foundation has ventured into that away from science?
So besides the Carlsberg Foundation, there's two actually other foundations. And the foundations you mentioned here supporting art and cultural activities is actually called the New Carlsberg Foundation. And you should recall that there was actually two brewers of our founders. There was the father, J.C. Jacobsen, and then there was his son, Carl Jacobsen. And Carl Jacobsen was actually also a great brewer like his father. When the father decided in 1876 to donate his brewery to the Carlsberg Foundation and to the Royal Danish Academy, of course, Carl became a little bit unhappy and angry with his father's decision. But on the other hand, Carl actually followed in the footsteps of his father. And in 1902, Carl actually also donated his brewery to the Carlsberg Foundation. But Carl was actually a strong lover of art, and every time Carl had earned more money in his brewery, he actually bought art and sculptures from around the world here. And today, if you come to Copenhagen, you will see a fantastic museum, which is called the New Carlsberg Glyptotek, which is actually one man's private art collection. So in 1902, Carl donated his brewery to the Carlsberg Foundation, but at that time, another foundation was established called the New Carlsberg Foundation, which donates money to art. So we have the Carlsberg Foundation donating money to basic fundamental research and the New Carlsberg Foundation donating money to art. But you should recall, all the money to the two foundations comes from beer. It all comes from beer.
Well, you know, thank God for the Oedipal complex. I'm speaking to Professor Flemming Bessenbacher, a chairman of the Carlsberg Foundation. Next up, we speak about the Unleash project. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning. If you just joined us, I'm Sharad Kutan. And my guest this morning is Professor Flemming Bessenbacher. He is the chairman of the Carlsberg Foundation. We were just talking about the relationship between the father and the son and how, in some sense, you know, the Carlsberg Foundations now cover both the sciences and the humanities. And it does seem that we need both in our lives. But I do want to ask you about that Unleash project that you have. Could you give us more examples? Is it a competition? What exactly are you trying to do and who is it targeted at?
So the Unleash is a non-profit organization, which really you could call it an innovation lab. I took the initiative to establish Unleash, and the first Unleash event took place in August 2017 in Denmark. And again, I talked before about some of the global challenges in our society, and therefore idea came up to bring actually 1,000 talents, the best minds from around the world together, and trying to come up with solutions to, we actually were dividing them into 8 different themes: water, energy, food, health, ICT and education, urban sustainability, sustainable production, and climate change. And the 1,000 talents here, they came from 129 different countries around the world. The average age was 29 years old. They were divided up into these 8 different tracks, and within the 8 different tracks, where they were subdivided into groups of 5. And the idea is then that they should actually try to formulate a problem, and with the help of experts within the different areas here, and also with the help of Deloitte's great people helping this innovation process, they have to formulate business plan, because we would like to see actually the ideas coming out to really practical, implemented in our society. So it's really the 17 Sustainable Development Goal where we're focusing on these 8 different areas here. And why young people? Well, in my opinion, it's really sometimes these young people would have bright ideas, sometimes these ideas are getting killed in large organizations. So here we really have created a platform where they can try to foster these ideas, hire to great help to formulate them into business plans. If I look at the 1,000 talents, they came from three different categories. Some of them still came from universities, master students, PhD students. The other group coming from recently hired young talents in organizations from around the world. And the third group of people was actually people who also in a very young age have established their own companies here. It's fantastic to see the energy and the talents here. And the idea is that Unleash should travel around the world. We started out in Denmark, and now Unleash was launched in Singapore, and then Unleash will travel around. And it's not decided yet where it may go next time, maybe to China, maybe to India. We don't know
what
yet.
About Malaysia?
Malaysia could also be another possibility. So the reason is that we should have Unleash running until 2030, where the event will be in New York. But also we are creating really a network of young, talented people here, which I must say I'm truly impressed what they have managed to do in a short while here, and also following them on Facebook and other social media, I can see how they, after the event in Denmark, still work together and trying to develop their ideas.
One of the problems, of course, with corporations is when they do these corporate social responsibility type projects and they enunciate these higher values, they're often then accused of not actually putting them into practice in their own industries and in their own, you know, in their workshops, as it were. I know you have priorities around a zero carbon footprint or zero water waste when it comes to your operations. How successful has Carlsberg been in that regard?
I think corporate social responsibility have been in the DNA of Carlsberg. And last year, our management team introduced a new, very visionary sustainability program, which we call Towards Zero, as you just explained. And this zero is zero carbon footprint in our breweries, and it's zero carbon waste. It's also zero carbon, zero irresponsible drinking, and zero accident culture at our breweries.
So you don't allow your workers to drink while they're working?
Absolutely not. And we don't like them to drink while they're driving their cars, for example, either. It's a very ambitious project here. And to be honest, we don't really know how to reach the goal of carbon zero footprint and zero carbon waste. But I think, at least I've been pleased to see, both as a scientist, as a chairman, to see how that energy has that created a lot of energy within the organization. Many bright ideas is coming up from our employees. And you should also recall here that one size does not fit all. So in order to reach the goal of carbon zero emission, for example, at a brewery in Sweden, may be completely different from doing the same thing in a brewery in Malaysia or in China. In Dali, in China, for example, we just installed a big solar panel at our brewery there to reach that goal here. But I think it's important, as at least I see it, for businesses today. Maybe in the past for business, there was one P which was incredibly important, and that, of course, P for profit. I mean, you would like to create value for your shareholders. But to me today, in the 21st century, there's two other Ps which are incredibly important in order to run a sustainable business. And one of them is a purpose. I think many companies today would like to have an overall purpose. Why are we here and why do we exist? And I'm happy to say we have had that for Carlsberg for nearly 160 years, brewing for a better today and tomorrow.
Well, I can speak from personal experience that drinking a mug of beer or a pint of beer does make me happier. This is not necessarily an endorsement of alcohol drinking. There are critics, people who push back on alcohol, think that essentially they come from a religious framework, they think it's a sin, or otherwise think that there are problems associated with alcohol drinking. You said responsible alcohol drinking. There are some people who say we shouldn't actually allow alcohol at all. How do you manage that perception that that from alcohol you get alcoholism, you have a whole range of social ills?
Well, I mean, it's for sure that alcohol, there can be some misuse of alcohol. And therefore, I think also as a responsible company, we had to argue for active responsible drinking. And we are doing that at different occasions. We are doing that, of course, to our employees. That was the first natural place to start doing that, but also to our consumers and customers. We should not actually allow alcohol to be used when people are in a driving occasion here. We should not sell alcohol to young people and so forth here. Alcohol is, to me, a product which you also can enjoy when you would like to sit down with your friends make a happy occasion and so forth here. Beer is a low alcoholic product compared to many other products in the world here. So at least I like a beer. But I think we also, as a responsible company, have to argue for this, that this is a product which can also be misused, and we should actually not allow that and do whatever we can to avoid that.
What is the conversation in Europe today around things like responsible drinking? Have the questions been settled once and for all? You have the laws, you have restrictions on the purchase or the use. Is that enough to manage the question of alcohol consumption?
I believe so, but you can always step up and do better. When we have music festivals in Denmark and so forth, there will soon come up a big music festival in Denmark with 120,000 attendees and so forth. We have people on ground, they are arguing for this here. If some people is sort of getting in a situation where maybe they need help, I mean, we will be able to help them. We should communicate to their friends that they should help their friends if they get maybe a beer too much and so forth here. But also you should recall that beer is a product which sometimes you like to sit down and relax and have fun with your other people. And I think in the way with this very hectic life we have, I think actually these occasions where you also enjoy a fantastic good beer, and as you know, Carlsberg is probably the best beer in the world. That's why we argue for that. So I think we have reached a fair level of doing that.
I think there are competitors in this part of the world who would disagree, but we'll leave that as that. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Professor Flemming Baschenbacher, Chairman of the Carlsberg Foundation. I'm Sharad Kutin, and this has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan Malaysia's mobile data service provider of the year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.